Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Never Alone, Volume 1, Story 1. One of my scariest moments in the woods wasn't hanging upside down on a rappelling rope with the smallest scout holding my belay, but rather it happened on a short day hike with my scout troop in a national park a few years back. We were working on our land navigation skills using a good old compass instead of a GPS, just to make sure that we had that skill mastered. Doing so takes us off the marked trails, but with 8 scouts and 4 adults with maps, compasses, and GPSs, we were confident we could make our way through the 7 miles of looping trail we had charted out. After hiking a good part of the day and stopping for a trail lunch, we were making the last leg of our trek. We came up a rise to a small wooded knoll, ready to shoot our last bearing of the day. I was in the back of our troop when the scout on point stopped. I worked my way up to the front to check on what was going on. There, on top of the knoll, was what looked like a small camp set up. Tents, a tarp hung over coolers, a camp stove, and some chairs. Fairly ordinary, except this was well of the trail and far away from the designated camping area. With no water source and no latrine, it wouldn't have been our choice of sites, especially hailing cooler temperatures and a stove up the hill off the trail. I just read an article warning to watch for crystal meth labs being set up in the woods. I was concerned and decided to get out of there quickly. We checked our course that took us right through the campsite. I decided to loop around it and then take another bearing. I also told one of the assistant scoutmasters to mark the location on his GPS, just in case. As we circled the camp, I heard noises coming from it, followed by shouts. I encouraged the scouts to hurry and told an assistant scoutmaster not to stop until we were back at the parking lot. I stopped and turned to face our pursuers. Within a minute, they had gotten to me, 2 20-something males in jeans and T-shirts, brandishing a pistol and a shotgun. The taller one said, "What the F are you doing here?" I tried to explain we were just Boy Scouts hiking through the woods. The shorter one laughed, looking at my green shorts and socks, scout shirt, and Smokey the Bear hat, and said, "You're effing kidding me." The taller one told me to get the F out of there. I turned and walked away slowly until I was at the bottom of the hill. Then I ran to catch up with my troop. Story number 2. The Wilson Creek watershed area is located within Pisgah National Forest in northeastern North Carolina. I was with my roommate doing some late autumn camping near a waterfall that we had recently found. The first day we set camp and started down the trail. The first time we went, we bushwhacked down a mountainside. This time we took the trail. Turns out we missed a very well-hidden side trail and ended up about 5 miles off course at a different waterfall that we were already familiar with. We got our bearings on the map just as the sun began to set, and we started retracing our steps. We finally got back on track and were within a quarter mile of the campsite by 7 p.m. when we heard something in the still of the night. It was something big, and it was creating a hell of a ruckus, trudging through creeks and snapping limbs all along the way. We were hiking along a ridge and could barely make out a large dark figure below in the valley moonlight. It was standing upright, and from the sound of its walking pattern in the creek, it was walking on 2 limbs. We only listened for about 30 seconds before sprinting back up the trail to the campsite, where I quickly stoked the fire. Needless to say, we didn't sleep that night, then that something large was close to us. I'm sure it must have been a black bear, but at the time, I was sure it was a damn Bigfoot. I've been camping in the Rockies, the Sierras, the Red Desert, the Boundary Waters, and the Adirondacks. To me, none of those places have the same feeling as the Southern Appalachians. The stretch from Georgia into Kentucky seems to have a mysterious feel to it. It's almost as if the mountains themselves hold some deeper secret from ages ago. I think it's because the range is so old, but the Southwoods definitely have a different aura than any other wilderness areas I've been to. Next story. I was working for the Forest Service around the year 2000, which is a forest protection officer. Basically an overglorified garbage man who has the power to write tickets but doesn't carry a gun. There was a campground that I had to stop by on my route And I would clean the vault bathrooms and unload the trash, and then every few days walk throughout the campground and check for filled fire rings and trash that were left by campers from the weekend. The place was virtually a ghost town during the week, with a camper or two staying for a few days. This area was filled with ponderosa pine and oak, and there were a few campsites far back out of sight from the parking lot. At one of the furthest campsites, there was a tent way back, which surprised me because there were no vehicles in the parking lot. I thought maybe it had been abandoned. I called to the tent and no one answered. So curiosity got the best of me, and I unzipped it and saw a sleeping bag, books, stove, the works, but no person. I zipped it back up, documented it, and then went back to the truck to finish my route up the mountain. I decided to go check out the tent the next day to see if it was still there. It was, and there was more trash in the fire ring and new tracks. Someone had been there, but still no vehicle. I put two and two together and figured that someone must be camping there at night and then driving. Sometimes we would get people who had lost their homes or were kicked out by a wife or a girlfriend, and they would flee to the forest and drive the hour drive to go to town and then to their job and then return to the forest. I decided this was the case and would check back later on in the week. This was summer, and we got called to a small fire a few days later, so I was off the mountain for a while. I returned a week later and asked one of my co-workers if they had seen the tent I described at the campground. They had not been back to those remote spots, so I decided to check it out. Sure enough, it was still there. Different trash, no vehicle. I documented and then talked to our law enforcement officer, and he said to give him another week, and then he would write a warning. Most of these people stay a week and get out before the 14-day limit is reached. So I continued to make my stops in the morning and then return in the late afternoon before my shift ended to see if I could catch them returning and get a chance to talk to them. No car. The tent was still there. Finally, the 14-day limit had been reached, and the tent was there. I waited a few days after the limit and decided to write the warning. I issued a warning and wrote a note informing them that he had reached the legal limit of maximum days camping in the forest, and he would need to move on to a different forest. I unzipped the zipper a bit and slid the warning into the opening so that when he returned, he would find it. It was my weekend, and I figured the owner of the tent would probably forget how long he was there, and he didn't know about the 14-day rule. So, 2 days later, I started up the mountain and stopped off at the campground. No cars in the parking lot. Cleaned the bathrooms, threw the trash bags in the truck, and then made my rounds throughout the campground. As I started towards the remote area, I froze. The bastard was still there. There was a tent. I figured maybe it was abandoned. After all, I couldn't believe this person had the nerve to stay after the warning was issued. I walked to the campsite and saw new trash and a used propane tank near the fire ring. Obviously, someone had been there again. As I made my way up to the tent zipper, I saw my warning in the same place I had left it, but it was different. There was something drawn on it. I leaned closer and had a picture of a guy wearing a Forest Service hat and a uniform with a gun pointed at his head and the bullet flying through the air at the head. Written above the picture was F.U. I was shocked. I remember kneeling down thinking this psycho was watching me. Maybe he was never at work during the day but hiding in the woods. I remembered being really upset and in shock. I didn't touch the note. I left it where it was and headed back to my truck. I wanted to tear down the guy's tent, but I decided to talk to the law enforcement officer. So after my shift, I made a call to that person. He was out of the district, so I left a voicemail. He called me the next day and said that the guy was probably just bluffing and he would look into it when he got back. I asked if I could confiscate the tent and bring in the note, and he told me just to leave the guy alone, and he would more than likely just leave, or he would deal with him when he got back. The more I thought about it, he was right. They didn't pay me enough to deal with psychos, so I decided not to walk to that remote area, just to my regular stops. Another week went by, and I got curious. I decided to see if the tent was still there, and sure enough, it was, with fresh trash. The guy had to be living there, and there was that note, and the thought of this guy thinking he had one just irked me. I couldn't tear down his tent because if he complained to the district, the law enforcement officer would probably be mad at me. So I remember seeing the Blair Witch Project, and an idea popped into my head. I gathered stones and made a pile right in front of his tent. I covered my tracks and headed back to the truck. I knew he had to be coming in at night after working in the town, and the hour drive would mean he probably comes in at night. And with the campground being deserted, he would probably start to wonder. The next day, I skipped my first 6 stops and headed straight up to that campground. No vehicles. I hiked up to the remote spots, and lo and behold, the tent was gone. I still smile to this day imagining that guy walking into the Ponderosa with howling winds to find that pile of rocks out in front of his tent.
Next story. All the following occurred in Laurel Mountains of western Pennsylvania, in this order. Late July of 2010, a group of friends and I rented a cabin at Lynn Run State Park. We rented this every summer. We'd done it for 3 years, and the core of us were pretty much expecting to make the annual trip a fixture in our lives, until it was no longer possible to do so. Our group was made up of a diverse number of people from several locations. We had people from Pittsburgh, from Philly, from New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. All were either friends of mine from high school or mutual acquaintances that formed over the last few years. We had all sorts of different types of individuals in our groups. College students, executive protection agent, myself, a mechanical engineer, a phone salesman. One of my buddies was trying to make it in a band, just to give some background of variations of expertise present, and we were all in our early 20s. During this, which was the first of our week-long visits to the park, we took a liking to going on night hikes. We still do this occasionally, but on this particular trip, it had become the theme. Staying up late, being noisy and obnoxious, and going out in the dark. You know, the typical thing a group of kids freshly in or out of college would do. Thankfully, we'd been able to remove much of the loud and obnoxiousness from our repertoire of hobbies over the last couple of years, but we were fairly self-admittedly annoying that first year. On one of the last nights of the trip, 4 of us decided to do a night hike. We would drive to the top of Summit Road and park near the bog, hopping around several trails before eventually spending the majority of the female hike on the Laurel Highlands hiking trail. In attendance was myself, my then girlfriend, and 2 of our male friends. One of my friends was attending the University of Pittsburgh at the time. The other was jobless and basically just a bum from Philly. My then girlfriend and I were both attending a local community college. I was working in management at the local Target store. We visited the bog, hiked leisurely along the trails, and we were just generally having a good time. It was a spectacular night, just a small chill in the air and stars as far as you could see. The Philly bloke commented on that several times. We had just turned onto the trail when I thought I heard what sounded like yelling of some sort. It sounded as if it was quite a distance away, and no one else made mention of it, so I shrugged it off. As we continued, a short while further down the trail I heard yelling again, this time much closer and clearly audible to everyone else. I was curious about the origin of the sound, but no one was spooked by it. The sound gradually grew closer and closer as we made our way towards our destination. It sounded as if it was coming from our left. This portion of the trail is on a hill, and due left of us was downward. At this point, we were all getting a little creeped out. I can't put my finger on what the yelling was. Definitely sounded human, but I couldn't discern any words or phrases up until this moment. The yelling sounded closer than it had been at any point, and a clear phrase was screamed at us. I, for the life of me, cannot recall exactly what was said, and I wish to hell I could, but it was something generally in the scope of, "We're coming for you." Well, you can imagine what our slight apprehension turned into then. Just about full-out panic from my then-girlfriend, and the rest of us probably weren't much better. We picked up the pace for several minutes. University of Pittman in the front, Abbott Outdoorsman, and myself in the back. I turned my flashlight around, holding it backwards so I could fire it back into the trail after us. My thinking was, if someone was behind us, they would think I was closely inspecting our tail. But at the same time, not actually turning around allowed for me to maintain the quick pace the others were setting. As we made it further down the trail, the yelling stopped for a time before persisting again. After the occurrence of the yelling, we stopped, and I asked my non-bum buddy if he was concerned enough to take his concealed carry Glock out of his pack. He was the only one carrying a firearm during this hike. He complied and holstered the weapon before we continued. Now, he is very careful and borderline obsessive about keeping the fact that he carries private, even amongst our group of friends. The fact that he was willing to even put the piece on his hip tells me that he was as rattled as I was during this. When he was getting out of his pack, I was explaining to the other two why we had stopped, as they didn't know he was carrying. I purposely stated very loudly that we had stopped to unpack our firearms. I wasn't really sure if it was a smart move or not, but I figured just trying to get away from the yelling wasn't working, so taking the risk of elevating things by letting our pursuers know we were packing was worth it. From there on out, the yelling pretty much subsided. Whether the gun had anything to do with it or not, I'll never know, but I have to imagine it may have. We worked our way out to an access road and navigated back to the car using various streets and trails from there. Fast forward to December 2010. We had just gotten a huge snow in the area. My buddy from Pitt and I decided to jump in the car and head up to Laurel for a night of camping in the snow. This was the first real experience either of us had obtained as far as camping in such weather. We made the drive with no issue until we reached Summit Road. The main highway that surrounds the Laurel Highlands wraps around this road. There is access from both the bottom and top of the mountain. Due to the weather and my car, a 2009 Kia Rio sedan, we had decided to stay on US 30 and come down Summit, as opposed to trying to climb the road, which would have been quite impossible. On an aside note, my mother, sister, grandpa, and I had gotten stuck on Summit in snowy weather before. It's not a fun time. There is no real help for a good distance, and my grandpa was handicapped. My sister was diabetic, and my mother panics in such situations. Luckily, during the assistance, we were able to dig ourselves out. But I know the importance of being cautious in such weather in this area. As we made our way down Summit, there were several large SUVs, either partially or entirely, stuck off the side of the road. Some were just banked, while others were basically hanging off the edges of brief cliffs that lined the road. Most of these vehicles were Escalades or something similar. White-collar men with their freaking-out wives and young children. We stopped to help a couple of such families along the way to our access point. The fathers had no idea what they were doing. The children were scared or even crying, and the wives were either complaining or giving us ludicrous suggestions as to how we should free their vehicles. Eventually, we made it to our parking spot and hiked in. This was a particularly tough hike for me. My asthma was acting up, and my friend kept a rough pace, especially in the snow. He's 6'4", and I'm 5'9". The long legs make more of a difference than he realized. We finally settled on a spot some yards in from the trail and dug out a place for the fire and tent. Everything was going okay. After some time by the fire, we went to lay down in the tent, which was way too tight for both of us. After a while, laying uncomfortably in it, the roof collapsed. We laughed, and while I realized the night probably wasn't going to work out, I jokingly suggested we just leave it and use the top of the tent as a blanket. Here is where it gets a little creepy. We were talking, just laying there in the tent, and the next thing I know, I come to and it's pitch black. I hadn't been tired, sleepy, or anything like that, but somehow a chunk of time just vanished from my life. I do not recall opening my eyes or anything that would indicate I had been sleeping. I and my friend were both in the exact same positions as what I thought had just been seconds before. The only difference was that the late afternoon light that had been there was instantly replaced by midnight black. I called out to my friend, asked him, "What just happened?" To which he responded, "I don't know." Neither of us can believe we fell asleep, but I don't have another explanation for what occurred. Fast forward, early April 2012. Same buddy. My sister and I decided to go sleep at one of the shelter areas along the trail. If anyone is familiar with the area, this is a shelter site right off Route 30 on Laurel Ridge. We got there and set up in one of them lean-tos and tried desperately to get a fire going. Everything was wet. After considerable effort, we managed to raise some flames. It was a crazy cold night. I'm not sure what the temperature was, but the wind was howling from the moment we arrived, amplifying the cold. My sister is not an avid camper, and was using some of my spare gear. It was very cold, and I gave her basically everything I had brought to sleep in myself. My bag, two blankets, wool sweatshirt, and pillow. I kept my hoodie and the sheet I always bring. I moved down towards the fire and sat at the edge of the lean-to. My friend was already asleep, and my sister managed to follow soon after. As I sat there enjoying the harsh but bearable weather, I noticed a light far off some distance to the left of our lean-to. There are about half a dozen lean-tos in the shelter area, and none are up that way. I thought to myself that it was probably a tower of some sort, some light blinking away, but after some thought I realized it couldn't have been. The elevation and direction I was looking at was too steep for me to have been seeing past the woods into civilization. My next theory was that it was a solid light, and the wind was just blowing the brush in between us and was going back and forth, giving the appearance that the light was blinking. At this juncture, I woke my friend up and asked him to take a look at it with me. He was baffled himself, but debunked my latest idea with the fact that the blinking was steady, on, off, on, off. There was no randomness to the blinking whatsoever, totally rhythmic. He, tired and somewhat annoyed, crawled back into his bag, but I was still uneasy. There were no other parties in the shelter area and no other cars at the trailhead. Unless someone was hiking a larger portion of the trail, we were alone. I mean, even if it was another camp, why wouldn't they have been making use of a shelter? I'm aware that people like to use personal tents instead, but in that weather? And if it were a camp, what kind of gear would be blinking like that? Not to mention where the light was coming from wasn't a very welcoming place to set up camp. Thick brush all around and on a hill. I sat there for hours watching this light. I'm not sure why it bothered me so bad, but it did. Finally, sometime around 4 a.m., I couldn't take it anymore. I was too tired to be concerned. I crawled into my sheet and went to bed. I woke up several times, sweating over the next couple of hours, and checked on the light each time. It was there, persisting until daylight made it vanish. I thought perhaps it was a game camera of some sort, but I've never seen a game cam with a large blinking light. I have no idea what that was. I really wanted to go check it out in the morning, but when we all woke up, everyone was freezing and we just hiked out. I still get goosebumps thinking about that one. Something about that light really bothered me. Next story. I've had two experiences in my life that were truly unexplainable. The first one, I was about 16 and my friend was 17. We hung out all the time and knew about every gravel road within 100 miles of my hometown, close to Fargo, North Dakota, but on the Minnesota side. One day he came to pick me up about 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and we went cruising and fishing to some different spots we knew of on the Buffalo River. After catching some garbage fish, we decided just to go drive around and see what we could see. Ended up taking a two-track road that came to a T, and we saw an older farmstead that looked like no one was living there presently. He drove up the driveway and just sat in the car. No one came out to greet us, so we decided we would take a look around. A shelter belt was to the south and east of the home, and the home itself had vines growing all over it. Once we got out of the car and started walking toward the home, within about 50 feet of the front door, all hell broke loose. It sounded like a huge flock of birds were getting up out of the trees, but we could see nothing. All of a sudden, an elm tree, about 60 feet tall, on the outside edge of the shelter belt, almost bent over in half, with the majority of the branches of the top tree laying flat on the ground for a second or two, and the tree sprung back up. By that time, we were both running so fast back to the car, I started looking over my shoulder to see what was behind me, and also did my friend. And the only way I can explain it was looking into a giant ball of fumes, orange in color, and it was moving the opposite way from us through the shelter belt, and it sounded like full-size limbs snapping off trees in the direction it was going. We made it back to the car, locked the doors, and we were both so out of breath that we didn't say a word to each other for the next 30 seconds. Got the car started and took off, and all we could come up with to say was, "What the hell was that?" I told the story to random people about the incident. They all looked at me like I was crazy. Until about a year ago, When I moved back around the area, I was with one of my dad's friends fishing, and we were on the way home, and I pointed in the general direction and told him the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life was about 3 miles that way. He got a half-cocked smile on his face and asked what I had seen. I told him, and he laughed. But his response wasn't what I expected. He told me he had brought so many people up around that farmstead, and not one of them wanted to go back afterwards. I guess the family that originally owned it, the father died in a freak tractor accident. The tractor rolled over on him, basically no incline at all, and the mother and son died within the next month. Ever since then, the place had been known to be haunted. I've never really been scared about anything in the outdoors because I could always make up an explanation for it. This, I couldn't. I know it wasn't my eyes playing tricks on me because it was in broad daylight. I don't know of any animal that could bend a tree down to the ground like that, especially without me seeing it in the process. And the mystery is, I still don't know what happened. Next story. When I was about 12, living in Newport, Washington, my buddy was staying the night. It was about 7 when his mom just dropped him off, and my mom left to get something at Safeway, leaving us home alone. After watching her close the garage door and leave, we went upstairs and been playing video games in the new PS2 for about 10 minutes when we heard the electric garage door open, but not shut. I was close to the window, so I just peeked out, but saw no car or the garage light shining onto the driveway. No biggie, never said anything. Then we heard a car door open and shut in the garage, but nothing after that. Buddy said something about helping my mom, and I followed him to the inside garage door when we noticed that the garage light wasn't on. We had a big doggy door that was transparent. I flicked the switch on the garage lights, then led the way into the garage. The garage was completely empty. The garage door was shut, and the garage door opener light was off. You know, that light in the opener unit that stays on for a few minutes after the door is operated. It was cold, like the garage had just opened. I opened the garage door for a second time to see if anything was wrong with my mom's remote or something. Door and light worked fine. Nothing. Nobody. Quiet. Buddy looked at me and asked if I'd heard the garage door and stuff open. And of course I said yes. We grabbed the nearest thing to us, which were broomsticks, retreated carefully to the living room and looked at the pause screen until mom came home and made dinner. The night was normal after that. Never had that happen again. Next story. My father and sisters and I were camping in the pines. The closest cabin is several miles away, and there are no developed camp spots around. We were camped in the same spot for a few days, and my dad kept talking about this red light that was illuminating the tent the previous night. I asked him to explain it, and he kept saying it was a faint red glow. The whole tent was red. So that night, we stayed up a bit later to see if we saw anything. Well, I fell asleep only to be woken up by my dad, saying the red glow was back. I couldn't see any red light, and he swore it was there. I grabbed my rifle, and he got his gun, and we unzipped the tent and started patrolling. Nothing. The next morning, I looked for tracks to see if someone was nearby, and I couldn't see anything in the sand, but there were a lot of rocks and pine needles. So it is possible that someone could be coming close and shining a light. But if so, I couldn't figure out why. My dad thought perhaps it was a poacher or maybe a perv trying to spy on my sisters. Anyhow, I was trying to decide if my dad was seeing things or if he was right. The next night we positioned ourselves in the trees and waited. Nothing. Back to the tents, and he woke me up again in the middle of the night, swearing that the red glow was back. Again. Out the doors with the firearms, we start patrolling. No sign of the red light. I decided that my father was seeing things. That night I told my dad we should head down to the meadow as I wanted to stargaze, and that would give him a good chance to look for satellites, UFOs, and the red light. We whispered and chatted about life, saw lots of shooting stars and satellites. Makes me miss that property right now just thinking about it. All of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see a red light. I tell my father, "Shh, I see it, Dad." I grab my rifle and hit the dirt. Sure enough, a red light was weaving through the forest headed in our way. It looked like one of those red light filters or such. The light was over 500 yards away, but definitely moving towards us, disappearing at times behind pines, but it was real. We retreated out of the meadow, back towards camp, and into the safety of some big ponderosa. We got back and searched, but no red light. But at that moment, I knew it was real. Then it was there again, only 300 yards away and moving towards us. My dad was telling the truth the whole time. Who was this guy with the red light? Why was he shining it on our tent? Why was he out in the woods every night? We still felt too vulnerable, so we retreated again closer to camp and decided if he came closer, one of us would call out to the guy and find out his intentions. My sisters were asleep and had no idea. Nothing. A half hour later, still nothing. We sat motionless. The questions were swirling in my head. What if he had night vision? Thermal? Was he watching us sitting there? The pressure was too much. My dad and I came up with a plan to empty our clips into some stumps. If he was nearby, he would hear and he would know that we had firepower and we were not afraid to use it. Our gunfire echoed down the valley in the wee hours of the night. We would shoot and then move through the woods and then shoot again. Nothing. We eventually went back to the camp and tried to get some sleep. The next morning, my dad and I headed towards where we had last seen the light, and sure enough, 100 yards from where we were hiding in the trees, we found fresh human tracks. They were heading towards our camp, and then the tracks broke into a run. They headed back into the woods fast. He was running. We guessed that was about the time we heard the gunfire. He beelined it into the woods, and then we lost the tracks in the pine needles and rocks. We never had any problems with a red light guy since that time, whenever we were in that area.